Welcome to the Soul Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're in the book of Deuteronomy, and we are...
It's kind of hard to tell, but halfway through?
Yeah, coming up on the halfway point in Deuteronomy. I think we'll pass the halfway point this week.
This week. Yeah, exactly. So last week we saw God's rule for when the nation was going to go into the promised land, into Canaan. And he says, you're going to have to fight. I'll be there. I'll be in the front, but you know, you guys got to be there too.
Yeah.
We also saw God... starting to tell the Israelites through Moses the second giving of the law, which we have said this. This is what this book is about.
That's what the word Deuteronomy means is the second law, and it's the children of the children of Israel. It's the children of the generation that came out of Egypt and was rescued. So some of them may have seen some of the plagues in Egypt, had seen the Red Sea, but they were not adults yet. Right. So they were not judged as adults, right? When the people rebelled and would not go into Canaan and everything. So now here's their chance to undo, sort of, you know, to do what their parents did. Fix what their parents did.
Right. Well, let's see how that works on the phone. Sorry. All right.
Spoilers.
So we're going to start in chapter 15, and we're actually going to go all the way through to chapter 19 this week.
Yeah, we have five chapters this week. They're all fairly short. Just one chapter a day. Yeah.
Really all right, I'm going to start off with a question to you. So in a couple cases, and we're going to see this in chapter 15, Moses talks about a release. In this specific example, there's a release of debt. Mm-hmm. So what are we talking about with a release?
I mean, it's basically the debt forgiveness. It's the balance is just forgiven. Yeah.
So I can come to you and I can say, I want to buy whatever off of you, and I don't have the money.
Okay. So a borrow of some kind. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I pay you in whatever installments I say, and it may be multiple years type of deal, because I have to wait for my crops to come in, and you're going to get a portion of that. In a specific year, that debt is going to be forgiven.
The seventh year. So every 7 years, it was a Sabbath year. And so this is where, and we'll see, debts were forgiven, slaves were freed.
Right.
Because most of the time, slavery was, I'm selling myself into slavery to pay off a debt. That's why they're linked together, right? So every seventh year was a sabbatical year, and it just sort of gave like a Sabbath day, sort of ended the week and wiped the week clean and gave you rest. In the same way, a sabbatical year, a Sabbath year, wiped everything clean, and you got to start over as a nation.
And so this would be the same year. I mean, everybody would know about it.
Yep.
The debt, the slave, everybody's happening on the same year.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Well, there are things built in. I mean, it's not like, okay, so on the day before
the Sabbath,
you don't get to borrow $1 million.
And that's exactly where I was going, right? Right. And this rule doesn't apply to foreigners either.
Right.
So foreigners, if it's a 20-year loan,
it's a
20-year loan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So God built in protections where people, couldn't abuse it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and God's assumption also is, or expectation is, that there aren't poor Israelites too. If you're going into this land of milk and honey, and God's going to give you all this stuff,
right?
There shouldn't be poor people.
Turns out that everywhere there are people, no matter how much you give,
somebody
people,
is always the poorest.
There's always poor, and Jesus even said, "You will always have the poor with you." Right?
Right.
In an area where God is taking care of everything, why are there poor people? You sort of have to place that on them to some extent, right? Yeah.
Your clothes aren't going to wear out. I'm giving you food. I'm giving you water. God also promises you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow from any, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you.
Yeah.
So has those parts of the promises or what he's asked them to do?
Not yet. No, because these were all, and you mentioned this recently, I don't remember which week, but these were conditional. Right, these were conditional promises, and they went into
if
the land.
If
they had obeyed everything, this is exactly what would have happened. Now we do see, under Solomon, he had a huge range over countries that would pay taxes or tribute to him. But they were still foreign nations, right? It wasn't like he ruled over them. So the closest that we could see that is Solomon. It will be fulfilled ultimately in the millennium. But no, we haven't really seen anything like that yet.
So God says, it's still in chapter 15, if somebody is poor, you can't be insensitive to that condition.
Yeah.
Which I love that. As soon as I read that, okay, I don't know where we're going here, but I like this.
Yeah.
Instead, you should lend him what he needs. I think it's very interesting that it doesn't say give.
Right.
It says lend.
Yep.
And even in the Sabbath year, and then there will always be poor.
Yeah.
Slaves are to be released in the seventh year of serving. He says, remember, you were a slave in Egypt too, right? So there's some kind of building up. You know, this isn't a terrible thing.
Yeah. The way we think of slavery today is completely different than the way God had it built in here. Whether it has to do with women or slaves or, you know, whatever, there's always a dignity of the person, a respect of life.
That's what we're looking for,
a dignity. God said, these things are going to happen, so here's how you do it well.
Right.
Here's how we treat people, no matter what their situation is.
Right. Even to the point where if a servant or a slave wants to stay, right, there's a rule for that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll pierce your ear, and that'll let everybody know that you chose.
Yeah, so I know myself, and there's no way that I can provide for myself the same way that you have been able to take care of me while I was indebted to you. Would it be okay if I just stayed on with you?
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, there is provision for that.
Right. The firstborn male from the flock and the herd has to be set aside for God. They must not be worked, must not be sheared. They're to be sacrificed to God and eaten there, right, mm-hmm. where the sacrifice takes place. So no fair me doing a sacrifice of my own. This is we're taking it to the temple, a designated place at a designated time. And every time we see animal being sacrificed, it's always followed by, and do not eat the blood.
Don't eat the blood. Don't eat the blood. Life is in the blood. And that's not a Mosaic law thing, just by way of reminder. This goes all the way back to before Israel, before Abraham. This is Noah. This is post-flood. From the day that God permitted us to start eating animals, that's always been the prohibition.
And followed up in the New Testament.
Yeah, too. Yeah, it's always been. So we still are to abide by that today.
Yeah. The animal can't be offered if it has blemishes, lameness, blindness, et cetera.
Yeah.
So then we get into chapter 16, and it's mostly about three festivals. These festivals all require a male Israelites to celebrate in Jerusalem. So if you're in the surrounding parts, you know, physically coming into Jerusalem for it. And it's God bringing his people back, you know, three times a year.
Yeah.
And a couple of these are celebrations.
Yeah.
The first one is Passover.
Yeah.
Celebration, but more somber.
Yep.
It's a reminder of what happened when they came out of Egypt.
Yep.
And it's a reminder of God saying, you know, I took care of you. Mm-hmm. I will take care of you if you follow my rules.
Yeah. And all three of them are reminders. They're all meant to be reminders of something specific that God was doing with them.
And these still happen today, right? Passover, you know, can't eat anything with yeast in it for a week on TV. There's always, you know, this time or that time of year, people, you know, they're getting rid of their yeast and baking their bread, and we have no idea what they're doing. And, you know, they never tie it back to God, or, you know, I'm sure that's intentional on there, but.
Yeah, on TV. Yeah. What's interesting is I'll just make this note here, is that based on the books of Kings and Chronicles, it seems like they didn't observe these faithfully during the time, you know, once they got settled in the land. Because as you're reading through Kings and Chronicles, you get to, you know, Josiah and Hezekiah and some of these others. And it says, and they hadn't done this since the days of. Right. It's like, what do you mean they hadn't done this since the days? Every year.
Right. But there were so many evil leaders that came in, they just, you know, conveniently forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking about Sabbath years earlier, the seventh year. The reason that the exile, when they were taken into captivity, was 70 years long, God specifically said, that's the number of Sabbath years you didn't let the land rest.
Yeah.
Right? So now I'm going to give your land 70 years, because you missed 70 Sabbath years, right, you know, over 490 years. So I'm going to give your land 70 years to rest that you didn't give it. So they weren't following this stuff,
right,
you know, as time went on.
Right. There's a festival of weeks, also called Pentecost or First Fruits.
Yep.
It's a voluntary offering. And the idea is you bring in a portion, you bring in from your fields proportional how blessed you were.
Yeah. Right? So it's a percentage.
If you're highly blessed.
Yeah.
Or less. And this seemed to be more of a festival with people rejoicing.
Before. It's the early harvest, 7 weeks, 50 days after Passover. So it's the summer harvest. It's not the big one in the fall, the autumn. But it's looking forward to, this is the first that God gave us this year. So we celebrate and we give him back part of the first, before we get to the rest of our year.
And that would be the Feast of the Temporary Shelters?
No, that was still the Feast of First Fruits. Okay. That was Pentecost.
No, but the second one, the bigger.
Oh yeah. Later in the autumn.
Yeah.
This one specifically though, the shelters or the Feast of Booths or Sukkot, they built a tent to remind them of when they lived in tents.
And then they would stay in that tent
for a week. Stay in that tent for a week. But again, I'm not sure that they really followed that once they went into the, which is part of the whole thing. They forgot what God had done for them. Every single one of these was hey, God is taking care of us out of Egypt, taking care of us in the land, taking care of us when we were in tents in the wilderness.
Yeah. So this one was around the time of the grain and grape harvest.
Yeah.
Another festival for God. He's going to bless you for all the productivity, and in whatever you do, so rejoice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a rejoice. And then it also says you must not appear empty-handed.
Yeah.
Right, to a dinner party.
Yeah.
Right. And give what you're able.
Yeah.
Same way. And then the chapter ends with justice. The idea is each village needs to appoint judges and civil servants, which, you know, I take to be police officers. They must judge the people fairly. You know, no bribes. Do not show any favoritism. We must pursue only justice so we can live in the land God is giving you.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. You know, and everybody says it, right? You know, you need to have favorable justices, but life's certainly a lot easier when it happens.
Yeah.
Then we get into chapter 17. God and Moses, they continue with rules about the justice, and God considers it offensive to sacrifice a bull or sheep that has a blemish or other defect.
Yeah.
Right? So you have this absolutely gorgeous animal. I'm going to give him my B.
Yeah.
God knows.
Yeah.
Right? It's offensive to him.
Because it's a heart issue.
Right.
I mean, it really comes down to a heart issue. It's like, remember, all of these things are supposed to remind them that God gave it to them, right? God is the source of all of their blessings and all of their stuff. So you're telling me you can't literally sacrifice one of these, you know, that you get to eat anyway, that, you know, the priests get to eat. I mean, it's not like you don't get any benefit of it, but you're like, well, you know, I want to use this one to breed.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's the best.
You're telling me that God can't give you another one?
Right.
I mean, it's a heart thing. It's never been about the animal. It's never been about the sacrifice.
Well, then it's also, well, but Daniel did this. So, you know, I must do this too.
Yeah.
All right. So if a man or woman is found breaking the covenant by worshiping other gods, they need to be investigated with a public hearing with two or three witnesses.
Yep.
So back to the whole justice thing that's already been established. If found guilty, they must be stoned, with witnesses throwing the first stone and all the people joining in.
So does that whole throw the first stone sound familiar to anyone? So John chapter 8,
he who hasn't sinned,
throw the first stone. And so the Pharisees, Jesus said, they're like, you know, they're backing up because he's referring to, you know, witnesses here. By the way, the idea of witnesses does continue into the New Testament, into the church age, where God never wanted, you know, he said, she said type, well, you know, you're arguing in a court of law, you know, and it's all hearsay,
right?
You've got to have witnesses who will have firsthand knowledge. They've seen it. They were there. You know, the whole thing, who can actually say, yes, I stand as testimony for this. If you don't have witnesses, if it's just hearsay, if it's going to be an argument, you can't take it to court. Yeah. Nothing can be determined without two or three witnesses.
Right. If a matter is too hard to judge, it goes before the priests. You must follow their verdict without fail, right? That's it. You can't go up any higher than that. No deviations either. So if a person takes this lightly, you know, they're not not that they're not paying attention to it, but, you know, this is wrong, you know, yeah. whatever, that person must die. So the people will hear and respect them.
So it's really interesting because we think, well, but isn't Moses or Joshua or whoever higher than the priests talking to God? There wasn't.
Right.
God's plan was to rule the people through the priests. The priests were the Supreme Court. They yeah. were the direct mediators between right. God and the nation. There was no person after, yeah. you know, Moses.
So he's establishing that rule that they have the authority.
I'm right.
giving them the authority. You need to take it serious.
So when we get into the times of the judges, the reason that there's God is appointing and using judges out there is because the priests aren't doing what they're supposed to do. So now we have a bad justice system. We have bribes and all the stuff that Moses right, is that saying right. don't do, right? We have all that out there. I also find it interesting. Most of the time, the punishments that are listed or the, you know, in mm-hmm. the law are just about punishment. Okay. Right. It's not necessarily about deterrence. Deterrence is sort of a secondary issue. But occasionally it is actually mentioned yeah. so that they don't do it.
Yeah, right. True. True. Well, then he talks about a king. If you want a king, right? If the nation of Israel wants a king, which is interesting because God doesn't want a king.
Nope.
He has it set up the way he wants. But if the people are going to have a king, then you have to select a king that God chooses.
Yeah.
And then there's a number of characteristics that this king must lift up to.
Yeah.
Must be a fellow Israelite. That one makes sense.
You know, what's interesting is in the New Testament, Herod wasn't. Herod was an Edomite. He wasn't actually from Israel. So just.
He also wasn't appointed by God. Right? He must not accumulate horses for himself,
mm-hmm.
must not allow people to return to Egypt for horses,
yeah.
must not marry many wives, must not accumulate much gold and silver. And when he sits on the throne, he must make himself a copy of the law
yeah.
and write it out
Have
himself
a handwritten
and
copy.
Keep yep. it with him so yep. he can always read it.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting there.
Yeah. We look at the kings that they had. It's like, okay, so check one, they were all Jews.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the thing?
Well, and especially when we get into Solomon, must not accumulate horses, must not accumulate much silver or gold.
Yeah.
You know, it's much is kind of debatable, but not with Solomon.
That was Solomon. Yeah. That was Solomon. And it's interesting is that Solomon did go back to Egypt to buy horses. Right. I mean, he violated this thing like all the way down the list.
Yeah. Must not marry many wives.
Many wives. You know, it's interesting that Saul had multiple wives. David had multiple wives, never condemned for those.
Right.
Solomon, you start getting into the hundreds.
Yeah.
I think that qualifies. Yeah.
Chapter 18, we move into the priests and the Levites. So the Levites is the tribe, right? One of the 12 tribes, and the priests are a subset in there, and they have no inheritance or no land.
Yeah,
we got to qualify that a little bit.
Yeah,
because they would have a house. So, but the idea was they don't have their own territory.
Yeah,
but within the other tribes, they're going to live because they are the priests for that area.
Yeah.
For that tribe.
Yeah. So you could be, so let's say you're the tribe of, I don't know, Simeon or something, right? So you're a Simeonite and you have your family land and everything. And right next door to you lives a Levite. What's a Levite doing in my land? He's actually serving the people of Simeon or in that village or area. So he doesn't actually have any of the tribal land. But he has a house that, you know, if he decides to move, he could still sell it or whatever.
Right. He also doesn't have land for crops. So he needs to have food.
Right.
Maybe he has a small thing, but he's not having something where he can sell.
Yeah, because his job is ministering to the people of the land. Right. You know,
And these offerings and sacrifice we were talking about, that's part of his food.
Yeah.
That's how he is living.
That's his pay.
Right. And even he has specific cuts that is his.
Yeah. Right?
The soldiers, the jowls, the stomachs of the bull and sheep. Or for the priests, as well as grain, wine, and olive oil. And
yeah,
gold.
Yeah. So when we look at the tithe system and the tithing system, which was really basically a tax, the people would bring that to help pay for the Levites and the priests who were doing ministry for the people, and it was their full time job. So they you know couldn't work to you know.
Right. God also says, no terrible practices. Never sacrifice your son or daughter, right? I will never ask you to do this.
Right, yeah.
Drive out all the soothsayers, the sorcerers, the witches. Be blameless before God. The nations that we fight, they're going to do these things.
Yeah.
you do not have permission to do this.
Yeah.
And that was part of the problem. And that was also why he wanted some of these nations wiped out.
Yeah.
Because Israel would have picked up on these.
Yeah. And that, and again, I keep coming back to this, but only certain nations or only certain tribes needed to be wiped out. The rest of them didn't need to be. But some of these were so wicked, so pagan, that God basically looked at them as an abomination, a mark on the land. They needed to be scrubbed clean before Israel could live there.
So the next one may be a little bit familiar to some people. God will raise up a prophet from fellow Israelites. You must listen to him.
Yep.
This prophet will have God's words in his mouth and will speak whatever God commands. God will personally hold responsible anyone that pays no attentions to the word of this prophet.
Yeah, yeah. So God told Moses there, and Moses then told people that there is going to be a prophet coming after the pattern of Moses, like Moses. And the Jewish people for thousands of years have recognized this as a messianic prophecy. Right. And that's what Jesus did.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He also talks about prophets, and we've talked about it before, that there's going to be a bunch of false prophets.
Yeah.
Here he tells how to know if it's a false prophet.
Yeah.
If a prophet speaks his own words, he must die. So how do you know if he's speaking his own words? If the prophet makes a prediction that doesn't come true, he's a false prophet.
Yeah. And we're we're not talking these vague
500 years from now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like you're going to a fortune cookie, you know, you're going to have a good day. All right. I got that one right. Come on. You know, it's like when God makes a prophecy, there's details, there's information. It's like, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's gradable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No. All right. So then we get into chapter 19, which is the last chapter for this week. God's going to provide the land for the Israelites. And I know we've talked about this at least once already, but this land already has cities on it.
Yeah.
This land already has roads. It has infrastructure. And God says, you're going to live in these cities. But you need to take three cities and set them apart in the middle of your land. And these are going to be sanctuary cities. So there needs to be roadways into these cities, you know, way for people to get in and out. And anyone who unintentionally kills somebody can go to these sanctuary cities and live their life out there.
Yeah.
And if God adds to the land, you're going to have to add more sanctuary cities too.
Yeah, because they have to be spread out where they're, you know, you're never too far away if something were to happen accidentally. Notice that these were not sanctuary cities where I could just commit any crime I wanted to and go hide.
Yeah.
Right. This was specifically for unintentional, we would call it, you know, negligent homicide or, you know, accidental manslaughter or something like that. It's not murder. Yep. You know.
Well, he also adds there can't be hate in there also. So if someone hates someone else and kills them and they run to a sanctuary city, the elders can actually have him removed and return back so the blood avenger can kill him.
Yeah, yeah. So extradited, right?
Right.
And this is, I think, what Jesus was talking about. If you hate, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, if you hate someone, if you hate your brother, you've already murdered him in your heart. There, even if you don't commit the act, murder is a heart issue before it's an action issue, right?
Right. You must not encroach on your neighbor's property, which is defined in your inheritance. We're still seeing that today.
Yeah. Yeah.
A single witness goes on to what you were saying about testifying, and we end here for this week. A single witness may not testify against another person for a trespass or a sin. There has to be two or three witnesses.
Yeah.
And if a false witness testifies against a person, then both parties must stand before the priest and the judges who investigate the matter. And if guilty, you must do to the liar what you would have done to the accused.
Yeah.
That's a nice one.
I really like it. It's sort of like the reverse golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yeah.
Do unto the liar what he was trying to have done to you, right? And God codified it and built it into the thing here.
And this also has a verse in there, a life for a life, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Which we usually think of. Yeah, we usually think of that as just revenge. But no, it's not just personal revenge. It's justice. It's not a life for an eye.
Yeah.
Right? It's, you broke my finger, I'm going to chop off your head. Right. It's eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life.
I was going to die, or you were testifying on me, and I was going to die. You lied.
Yeah.
You're not going to lose an eye.
Right. Yeah, it's so this theme of justice that's been, you know, sort of permeating all of these chapters. God is a just God.
Right.
And if it's death worthy, then justice is death. But if it's not death worthy, then it would be unjust to do death, right? God is a just God. And so that's one of the big takeaways that, fine, we're not under this law, we're not bound to this, but it still tells us about God, right? So when he's talking about the difference between negligent homicide or accidental manslaughter and murder and capital punishment execution, they all end up with the loss of life, but they're not all the same,
right?
And so God is very intentional about how he lays that out.
Well, and it's great, right? That's why it's taken a while to get through here.
Yeah, yeah. So, as you're reading through it, you know, and notice these differences, notice the little things, and let it remind you and build your appreciation for God and his character, right? As we see how he was dealing with the nation of Israel at that time. Again, we're not bound by this law, but I think there's some principles that we should be able to take away from these, right?
I agree.
Yeah. So we'll pick up here next time. Subscribe and follow our channel here and share this with anyone that you think would find this helpful. And we will see you back here next time.
Bye, everybody.